History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. What we've learned is they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and then listen patiently enough for long-buried memories to climb their way back up to the surface again. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves truly inspired by these stories of what men and women have done, have endured, have carried, so the rest of us wouldn't have to. The voice you're going to hear from today is quite a bit younger than the voices you're used to hearing from on Hometown Heroes, but it's the voice of one of only 65 Americans we could talk to today who can say they've been awarded our country's highest military decoration, the Medal of Honor. This next week will mark the 15th anniversary of the action that led to that distinction, a day that forever changed his life, but has also provided him with the platform to touch so many other lives. Before I let you hear from 43-year-old Leroy Petrie, I want to read you the citation for his Medal of Honor earned May 26, 2008 in Afghanistan as part of Operation Enduring Freedom. Before I read that, I want you to hear a sound. Do you have any idea what that is? It's a sound Leroy Petrie hears every day, many times a day. I'll explain in a bit, but first, the Medal of Honor citation for this Army Ranger, originally from Santa Fe, New Mexico, who also wears the Purple Heart, the Bronze Star, and the Legion of Merit. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Staff Sergeant Leroy A. Petrie distinguished himself by acts of gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty in action with an armed enemy in the vicinity of Paktia Province, Afghanistan, on May 26, 2008. As a weapons squad leader with D Company, 2nd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Staff Sergeant Petrie moved to clear the courtyard of a house that potentially contained high-value combatants. While crossing the courtyard, Staff Sergeant Petrie and another Ranger were engaged and wounded by automatic weapons fire from enemy fighters. Still under enemy fire and wounded in both legs, Staff Sergeant Petrie led the other Ranger to cover. He then reported the situation and engaged the enemy with a hand grenade, providing suppression as another Ranger moved to his position. The enemy quickly responded by maneuvering closer and throwing grenades. The first grenade explosion knocked his two fellow Rangers to the ground and wounded both with shrapnel. A second grenade then landed only a few feet away from them. Instantly realizing the danger, Staff Sergeant Petrie, unhesitatingly and with complete disregard for his safety, deliberately and selflessly moved forward, picked up the grenade, and in an effort to clear the immediate threat, threw the grenade away from his fellow Rangers. As he was releasing the grenade, it detonated, amputating his right hand at the wrist and further injuring him with multiple shrapnel wounds. Although picking up and throwing the live grenade grievously wounded Staff Sergeant Petrie, his gallant act undeniably saved his fellow Rangers from being severely wounded or killed. Despite the severity of his wounds, Staff Sergeant Petrie continued to maintain the presence of mind to place a tourniquet on his right wrist before communicating the situation by radio in order to coordinate support for himself and his fellow wounded Rangers. Staff Sergeant Petrie's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, the 75th Ranger Regiment, and the United States Army. So the 15th anniversary of those heroic measures that earned Leroy Petrie the Medal of Honor occurs this next week on May 26th, right before Memorial Day 2023. And if you listened closely to that citation, perhaps you made the connection between that description and the sound you heard earlier. That sound is the ratcheting of his prosthetic hand, replacing the one he ultimately sacrificed to save the lives of others by grabbing that grenade on May 26, 2008. We're going to hear the story of that day in his own words, but first, a word about what he's doing now as a representative of the Congressional Medal of Honor Society. I have the Society's website linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, and you can learn about all the recipients there. Of those living today, only one, Ralph Puckett, served in the Korean War. There are 16 from this century's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, including Petrie, and 48 living Medal of Honor recipients from the Vietnam War. Vietnam veterans took center stage this past week, where I live, in the middle of California, with perhaps the biggest crowd the Fresno Yosemite International Airport has ever seen welcoming home Central Valley Honor Flight number 25. 63 Vietnam veterans, many of them Purple Heart recipients, received a greeting that stood in powerful and heartwarming contrast to the reception they received a half century ago. And I want to thank everybody who came out to make that such a priceless, unforgettable, and healing moment for all of them. Vietnam veterans represent a group that Medal of Honor recipient Leroy Petrie devotes a lot of his time to now as he travels the country for appearances. That's actually how I had the chance to sit down with him last year in a community that truly sets the bar for how it values its veterans, Clovis, California.
Try to not give too many speeches, but try to get out and support as many veteran organizations that help with our men and women transitioning. Also, mental health has been one of my big things for the past several years, suicide prevention, resiliency, anything, education that helps with young kids. And our Medal of Honor Society, we have numerous programs, a character development program and a valor outreach program where we also try to reach out to VAs, any of these local organizations, VSOs that are going to support our men and women. And so anywhere I can be a positive impact, I try to support. I think that they're all passionate about helping one another, and they're all involved in some type of thing that's better in their community and the veterans that are coming home. And they still have that sense of selfless service. The pride, especially in Clovis and everything they do for their veterans. And that's what really stands out is they don't have to boast about their pride because it shows. This is one of the generations, the Vietnam veterans, that I've always held close and dear because of all they suffered, not only at war, but coming home. And I know that I joined prior to 9/11. I live up in Washington State. There wasn't a lot of thanks. There's still not that much today, but I think about how they were treated. And I think about some of the stories that some of my fellow recipients tell me of them coming off the bus or off the plane and going to the bus and having dog feces smeared on their uniforms and spit at and cursed at, but they still executed what they were supposed to, and that's to just walk onto the bus and totally ignore them, where many of us would have turned and wanted to punch them, and to be able to stand there and say, you know what, I'm going to be a bigger man. I'm not going to make a scene. I could probably smash this guy, but I'm not going to. And that's what really... I think I look at it as inspiring, that the intestinal fortitude to withhold personal feelings and to know it was just a job. There's always going to be someone that steps up and supports and defends our country and our Constitution, but two, we need our communities to support us coming home and while we're deployed. Mm-hmm. We rely on folks to take care of our families while we're gone, and when we come home, we hope to be a good pillar in our community and as we reintegrate. Really, I didn't realize this till I was close to becoming an NCO, and we did our award ceremony at a local high school in Tacoma. I was like, why are we doing this out in the public? There's a bunch of weirdos out there too. And I said, it didn't dawn on me till I realized that it's important. If we stay isolated and we don't share with the citizens of America what we're doing and why we're doing it, we'll end up in the same boat that we were in Vietnam, that they'll only see what they see on television and take that as gospel of, oh, they're over there fighting the war, and realizing that, hey, most of us don't want to be over there. We didn't join because we want to kill people. That's the hardest thing we ask our young men and women to do, to go overseas and do and see things that no human should ever have to. And they deserve our support coming home after they have. Our Vietnam veterans are finally getting the recognition they deserve. For me, it's an everyday. Every chance I see someone in the crowd when I'm talking that is a Vietnam veteran or could be, I try to recognize them and thank them because of the sacrifices I know that they went through, not only them, but their families.
And boy, was that evident this week at that Central Valley Honor Flight homecoming, a powerful contrast to the reception those Vietnam veterans received decades ago. If you haven't connected to an Honor Flight organization in your area yet, find the nearest hub to you by going to honorflight.org. You can find many videos and photos online of the gathering I'm talking about, including quite a few of the individual stories that cobble together a powerful tapestry of service and sacrifice. And if you do live in my area in Central California, there will be a television documentary on that particular Honor Flight effort, which actually can trace its roots back to a couple of listeners to this program who never knew what they were igniting with their phone calls. Long story there, but the documentary may explain it, and that film will debut on May 28th at 7 p.m. on Valley PBS in the Fresno and Bakersfield areas. And I know that if you're somebody who enjoys this program, I'm sure you're going to love that. 2 days before that, May 26th, will mark the 15th anniversary of the day Leroy Petrie's heroics in Afghanistan earned him the Medal of Honor. We're going to hear about that day from start to finish in his own words when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend, it's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is, Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level. Let's try a little experiment here. I'm going to say a common three-word phrase, and I want you to pay attention to what kind of reaction it produces for you. You ready? Here we go. Buying a car. Okay, be honest. Did you tense up a little? If so, I don't blame you. Buying a car can be really stressful, and I've got three more words for you to make sure you do get it right. You ready? Farney Automotive Group. We recently went looking for our daughter's first car, and I made a beeline for Selma because I knew my friends at Farney Ford, Farney Buick GMC, and Toyota of Selma were people I could trust. Trust is a very important word when it comes to buying a car. And here's my advice. Regardless of what kind of vehicle you're looking for, start your search at Toyota of Selma because you can check out their wall of honor with group photos from every single Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,300 veterans who have their pictures on the wall there and also got a free oversized group photo from their trip to D.C. thanks to the generosity of the Farney Automotive Group. So new or used, big or small, start your car search today at Toyota of Selma. You can't miss it on the west side of the 99 at the Floral Avenue exit. And don't leave without visiting that wall of honor.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to hear from a much younger veteran than usual. In fact, he's younger than I am. But what he went through is so similar to what we've heard from hundreds and hundreds of World War II veterans on this program through the years. Earlier, I read you the Medal of Honor citation for Leroy Petrie, 43 years old and originally from Santa Fe, New Mexico. You can find some of his memorabilia on display at the New Mexico Veterans Memorial in Albuquerque. That's just a few blocks north of Kirtland Air Force Base if you ever visit the Duke City. Or maybe you're one of our longtime listeners right there on affiliate KIVA in the Land of Enchantment. I played for you that sound. That's his prosthetic hand. It's a sound you may hear a time or two during the conversation as he adjusts it. But let's start out with what it means to be one of now just 65 living recipients of our nation's highest military decoration, the Medal of Honor.
You don't have any responsibility. There's some recipients I've never met. Some that after they receive it, they put it in their sock drawer and just went on with their lives. But I feel that I've been blessed with the opportunity to use it as a platform to help others. I don't have to do this, but I'm darn lucky I get to. And I see the difference I'm able to make, and my family does as well. And that's why they allow me to be gone so much, as they said, "Dad, we know this is important to you and important to so many others. We'll get time when you are home."
And you've had a chance to meet other recipients of the Medal of Honor.
I have.
What's that like for you? And are there some memories that come to mind of interactions with some of these guys that leave a powerful impression on you?
I think every single one of them that I've met has left an impression on me. It's an award based on action, not character. So you get all kinds of characters. But it's the same with the military. It's you come from all different backgrounds and you share stuff. And to be honest, it feels like I'm just with my guys in my platoon. Mm. When we're on a bus and they're giving each other a hard time and they're laughing and joking, but they're also there to support one another when they're having a hard time, or visit them when they're ill or in the hospital and checking on one another. You become like family. And I think that was the most important thing to me, was that when I showed up, they welcomed me in like family. I mean, I was the second living recipient since Vietnam, and so there wasn't many of us. And today, there's still not. But I also have the honor of, I was elected, I'm the president of the society now, and so they have been supporting us over the years. And I was like, okay, Leroy, it's time to stop being a dirtbag in the background. And these older guys have been doing the leadership the whole time. It's time for us to step up and take the reins and let them get some rest.
Mm-hmm. Before I ask you about your story, is there a guy or two who, hearing their story and what they went through to earn the Medal of Honor, just really grabbed you or moved you?
I don't think a single person. I think they all added to. It's the same way that people will ask me who's the most interesting person that you've met, or the most famous person that you've met, and I think they all contribute. And just like with my story, the hand grenade taking my hand, people will ask, oh, do you regret anything, or would you change anything? I joke and I said, I wish I would have grabbed that grenade with my left hand, because learning everything over again was not very easy. But I wouldn't change anything, not one thing in my life, because the good things and the bad things, they all contributed to who I am today. Some of those guys' stories, I don't know every single recipient's story. There's a little over 3,500. But I respect their stories, just like when I meet these people and they say, pick one. And I respect whatever platform they've earned, whether it's wealth, fame, money, whatever it is, athletes, whatever. But what I look at more is their character. Okay, you've done this, but who are you today? Mm-hmm. Are you still me person, or are you a good person? Do you have good values? And that's what sets in better with me, and the people that I'll hang around with are people of good character. I started my life hanging around with people not good character, and I almost failed out of school. And then I luckily realized that I was not only letting my parents down, but my teachers and everyone that supported me. And I stopped hanging around with those bad characters. And I realized from this point on, you're going to surround yourself with good people that support you and positively impact you.
You know, the Medal of Honor is not the only thing you're wearing there. You've got a Ranger pin. And that's a pretty tight-knit fraternity, too. Pretty small group. What does that represent to you? What does that make you feel when you put that on?
To me, it's a discipline. It's leadership, it's the bond of brotherhood. When I joined the military, like I said, I was still not the best yet, but every leader I had was an amazing leader. I only had one leader that wasn't that good, and I learned from him as well. But the discipline that they instill and the challenging environment that you're put into, it's important. And I realize that it's hard, because it needs to be. You need to stay vigilant in case of war. It's not a normal job. And there's a reason I tell folks, you stay in long enough, you end up with these receding hairlines, because it's stressful. Lives depend on you. And it is a life or death job. It's not like working at Burger King where you forget to put somebody's lettuce on somebody's sandwich and, oh, I'm sorry, we'll fix that. You can't bring those things back where once you train someone and a bullet leaves their barrel, you're responsible for that bullet as much as they are. You try to teach them ethics and to be a good person, but also to be a good soldier. The Ranger Creed was one of those things that I always looked at, and they told me if you live your life by the Ranger Creed and your decisions you make, you look at the creed, you'll be okay in life. And my drill sergeant in basic training just happened to be the guy who, from the movie Black Hawk Down, was running around making coffee the whole time. It was the actual character from Mogadishu. And he had a 4x8 Ranger Creed on the wall, and as all the other platoons were learning the infantry creed and the soldier creed, he said, men, you don't need to worry about all those other creeds. This is the only one you need to worry about. And as I went through different schools, I looked at the different creeds in the Army. They're basically all derived from the Ranger Creed. And I said, wow, this is where it all started. And historically, that's what they did in World War II. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get up those cliffs. And they looked back at General Norman Dakota, and he said, Rangers, lead the way. And we've been trying to maintain and hold that standard since then.
I know we can read your citation, and I know that's not the only incident you were involved in your service. I mean,
we all have stories.
Right? Well, whatever you're comfortable with, can you tell us, you know, from your perspective, the story of what happened that day and what you were thinking, how that unfolded, and what that represents to you now?
The day before, Rangers operate during night activities. We don't want to kill every terrorist, put it that way. A live terrorist is worth more than a dead one because dead ones don't talk. Mm-hmm. And so we'd try to catch them while they're sleeping, and we'd go at night operations because we had night vision and we had the cover of darkness. Well, this day before our mission, we got alerted. All special operations in theater in Afghanistan, hey, there's a high-value target that's come up on the net that we think is operated in Afghanistan somewhere. Everyone's going to stand down. Whoever is closest to him when he pops up will action on it. And so during the daytime, we normally sleep or we check our email, do laundry, all our other stuff, and go to the gym. But that morning, I woke up and I went to the our planning bay, and there's one officer across the room from me, and he's on his laptop, and I'm checking my email, and all of a sudden he jumps up. Petrie, go wake up the pilots. Didn't even question what it was about. Just ran to go wake up the pilots. Immediately went and woke up my guys as well. I said, hey, something might be going on. Check your kit. Be ready. It's better to be prepared than proactive instead of reactive. Mm-hmm. But as I did that, I went to our chow tent, if you will, and as I walk in there, it's decorated red, white, blue everywhere, and I'm like, what's going on? I get to the end. I was trying to grab a couple of little bags of beef jerky. We got stuck out a couple of days before and longer than expected, and morale from the young guys, oh, man, we were supposed to be back already, and you throw up a little bag of beef jerky and it boosts their morale. We call it lickies and chewies. But as I was doing that, as I get to the end of the table, I see the sheet cake, and it says Happy Memorial Day. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, wow. Took a moment of silence. Our up-tempo was so high that, by the time you look at the date, you're like, man, we've already been over here for 3 weeks or whatever it may be. And after I paid my respects, I ran out the door and immediately told my guys, check their equipment, and we started planning for this mission. The guy actually popped up in our area, and so high value target, quick mission planning. Next thing we know, we're on three Chinooks headed out to the mission. Rural Afghanistan, a lot of farmland and adobe type houses and compounds. And as we came off the Chinooks, the other hard part about it is because we're flying during daylight, you can hear a Chinook helicopter out for miles. Mm. And so as we land, and the ramp goes down in the back, and we're coming out the back, we're taking fire. The guy in the open field, politically correct term, we neutralize the threat. And as we're clearing the body, my platoon leader and I, we hear over the radio that one of our younger squad leaders had gone into the wrong compound, and he was correcting it and going across the road. And I said, hey, I'm going to break off, provide overwatch for these guys. And he said, go ahead. As I caught up to that squad, they had already breached the compound wall, which was probably about 20-foot walls. And they were already entering into the compound. I followed in as the last man. As they did, they went across the compound and started clearing a smaller structure in the back corner, kind of a two-story, and it had an inner compound in there. But I didn't even go in. I stopped in the doorway, and I said, give me another guy. My big thing in my mind was we needed to clear the rest of this courtyard and the adjacent small building. And so as soon as I got a tap, I didn't even look who was with me. I just knew I had somebody with me, and I started to move. It was PFC Robinson, and as we started to cross to this small adjacent building, two guys popped up probably 15, 20 feet to our left, spraying AK-47s from the hip. I got shot in my left thigh, and it felt like a sledgehammer, like somebody just pounded your leg, and kind of looked like a deer when it gets shot on TV where it bucks mid-stride, but then kept running because my mentally I was thinking, get out of the kill zone before you take another hit. Robinson got hit just below his armpit. He didn't know how bad it was. We found out later it was about a quarter of an inch from going over his plates, and it would have hit his heart, his lungs, and he probably would have died there instantly. But he followed me, got behind the small building. This building's only about 7 feet wide, about 6 feet long. And immediately I tell him, hey, watch that corner, do self-aid, and I'm watching this corner. They're shooting around the corner still. And I prepped a grenade, threw it over, it went off, kind of bought us a lull in fire. At that point, Sergeant Higgins, another Ranger, comes running over, and I said, hey, help Robinson, watch that corner. My biggest fear was they were going to come over and around the sides and finish us off while we're injured. And so I get on the radio, I'm giving my command a better picture of what's going on, tell them we still have Rangers in contact, heavy small arms, and two wounded Eagles. And next thing we know, we hear a blast. The two guys next to me look at me and they're like, what the heck was that? And I said, they're throwing grenades. Keep your heads down. Keep watching those corners. So I go back. I'm almost in a crouched seated position because my leg was hurting. I'm checking my side, watching my corner, turning back, checking on them, checking back radio. And on one of my checks to check on them, there was a pineapple grenade that had come over the building and landed right behind them. I knew we hadn't used pineapple grenades in years. It wasn't there before, and so just immediately saw it as a threat and reached out, grabbed it, and as I was throwing it away from our position, as soon as I opened my hand to release it, it exploded. Completely took the hand off, almost like somebody had taken a circular saw and cut it off. I sat up, grabbed it. The radius and the ulna were poking up about a half an inch. It was bleeding pretty, like more like oozing. And the skin was hanging all the way around, short 2-inch skin, flap skirt, so to speak. And in my mind, I was thinking, why isn't this thing spraying 3 feet in the air like in the movies? Blood just squirting. And when reality hit, I said, I know how to take care of this. I grabbed a tourniquet, put it on, tied it with my teeth in my hand, stopped the bleeding, and immediately checked on my two guys who got minor shrapnel. In fact, they both went out on missions the next day and stayed in the military for some time longer. But once I saw they were okay, one of my first sergeants comes running up to me and he grabs me by my shoulder, by my kit, and he's attempting to pick me up and say, come on, we're going to get you out of here. And I kind of pushed his arm and I said, you're not taking me anywhere. Not till you kill those SOBs behind the building and stop the volume of fire they're putting down on us. He saw that I was coherent. I had already started doing self-aid, and the best thing he could do was take out the enemy and stop them from firing on us. So he took off to go flank. At that point, when he left, there was another lull in fire. I don't know if they ran low on ammo or what it was, but I was able to grab onto another guy, and we ran out of there till we got to our casualty collection point.
And that sounds like a pretty good spot to take our final break. Are you imagining yourself in this Medal of Honor recipient's boots? What a gripping story from Leroy Petrie. And we'll hear the rest of it when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chance to listen to Leroy Petrie, one of just 65 living recipients of the Medal of Honor. His was earned 15 years ago this next week on May 26, 2008, in Afghanistan while serving with the 75th Ranger Regiment. We heard him describe that moment when he made the split-second decision to pick up an enemy grenade and throw it away. The blast occurred right as he released it, costing him his hand but saving the lives of his fellow Rangers. And when we left off, the severely wounded Petrie had somehow made it to the casualty collection point.
And at that point, we walk in and the medics are treating guys and you see blood everywhere. For me, it was the first chance I got to take a breath. I mean, the adrenaline and everything running. And the doc, one of our medics comes walking up to me and says, Petrie, we need to treat you. And I said, I'm good. I already got a tourniquet on this thing. I stopped the bleeding, helped those guys. And he said, well, we got to take a look at your legs. I completely forgot about my legs. And I thought I was only shot in the left thigh. It ended up being both thighs. And so I looked down at my pants and they're soaked in blood all the way to my boots. Mentally, I wanted to stay in the fight, but physically, I knew I was running out of juice. And my idea was that even if I used my last breath to give a radio call that could help my guys, that's what I wanted to do. But I knew I wasn't helping anybody by bleeding out. So I sat down and I let them cut off my pants and they put me in a litter. And as they started to carry me out to our helicopter landing zone where helicopter was going to come in for medevac, guys are running up to me and they're, hey, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. We're going to get them for you. And I'm pushing them away with one good arm I have. Get out of here. Go pull security. Because, I mean, we're still in a combat zone and there's still sporadic fire here and there. And my big fear is that they're going to get shot coming to comfort me. And never lost that leader mentality of looking out for my guys. And which is worse, I might get shot where I can't defend myself in this litter. Then I'm really going to be angry. But we get up to the aircraft. The aircraft lands, and they start loading us up. And even Sergeant Higgins next to me, he's leaning down, and he's like, you saved us, you saved us. I was like, great, get on the bird. I'm thinking big target, still thinking about their safety and everyone's safety. And at that point, they took us back to our forward operating base, Sharana, which is a dirt airfield. Dumped us on the side of this dirt airfield, all the casualties, and then the helicopter took back off to support the mission. And I think it was probably about 30 minutes later, they had a fixed-wing aircraft come in and pick us up. It was the J. Mao Bird, which is basically like you could do open-heart surgery in the back of this plane. And at that point, I was like, oh. And I had two PAs that were working on all of us casualties there that were organic and who I'd known since I had pretty much joined the Rangers. Several years before, and I felt a little at ease. Get on the aircraft, they load us on there with the litter, and probably about 30 more minutes, and they heavily sedated me. And next thing I remember is waking up in Germany. Germany was interesting. I wake up the next day in Germany, and the nurse is in my room, and she says, "Oh, you're awake? Can I get you anything?" I said, "Yeah. Can you get me a razor and some shaving cream?" She kind of does this double take, and she goes, "Excuse me?" I said, "Can you give me a razor and some shaving cream?" And she looked at me like I was nuts, but in my mind, that discipline of being in the Rangers was still at the front, where I was more worried about a colonel or somebody coming in not from my unit and seeing Leroy unshaven. Nobody would have cared in the condition I was in. I was pretty mangled, but that was our standards. In our blue book was Rangers will shave every single day to include weekends, holidays, at home, whatever. And so I learned how to shave left-handed that first day, but I also got a chance to call my wife, and I knew she was going to be an emotional wreck. At this time, it's Memorial Day back home. And my mother-in-law would come in sometimes to help with the kids, and they were both in their nightgown. It was early in the morning, and they got the knock at the door. And they'll come in fatigues, field uniform if you're injured, and dress uniform if you're killed in action. And she walks over the door, and she looks through the peephole, and she doesn't even look at the uniform. She just sees the tan Ranger beret, and she backs away from the door, and she said, "Mom, you're going to have to send the kids upstairs. You're going to have to get the door." And I knew all this was going to happen. And so I'm trying to think, when I call her, what I can tell her that'll put her mind at ease that I'm in good spirits and I'm doing okay. And so I call her and I said, "Honey, I'm in Germany. I got shot through both my legs, upper thighs, and I lost my hand right about the wrist." Phone goes dead silent. So, of course, the hamster on the wheel upstairs starts running as fast as it can to come up with something good to tell her. And I said, "The good news is the junk's still there." And she's like, "All right, he's all right. He's going to be okay. If he's joking, he's in good spirits." But that's the only way I could let her know that I was doing okay.
Wow. Well, I got a lot of questions. Some of them may be more on the dumb side than others, but they were basic anyway. I'm sure you've considered this. What would have happened if you didn't pick that grenade up and throw it back?
Well, the kill radius is usually 5 meters, so chances are we'd all be dead.
How many guys is that?
Definitely the two next to me, but there was a couple others as well nearby.
And yourself?
And myself, yeah.
In that moment, how does that thought process work? Are you thinking at all? Are you just reacting?
It had always been foremost in my mind that I looked at those guys like they were my brothers, like they were my children, and I would have done the same for them. I do want to share a picture with you real quick.
Yeah.
Artist did a rendition of the action, and he did a painting. This is a picture of the print, and it doesn't do it justice. The actual oil paintings hanging at my unit. And it's pretty amazing. So that was me laying on the ground with bloody legs,
mm-hmm.
with the grenade. But
wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Most of us will never be in that situation, and anybody watching or listening to this is likely never going to be in that situation. But I think people imagine themselves in it, and they have to ask themselves the question, what would I have done? What do you think it was that motivated you to act the way you did?
I know exactly what it was. It's a thing we don't talk about in the military that often. Definitely not in the Rangers unless we're talking about beer and chasing women. But love. It was love for a fellow soldier and responsibility. With leadership comes responsibility. And my biggest fear, people ask me, "Were you ever afraid?" I said, "Yeah, I was afraid every single day. I wasn't afraid of dying. I made my peace with God, and I said goodbye to my family. I knew it was the last time I could see them. And I accepted that. But what I was afraid of was I would miss an IED in the road. I'd miss a shooter in a window. I'd miss the opportunity to train my guys on something that could have saved their life. And what I feared was having to come home and hand that folded flag to a mother, a daughter, a brother, a sister, a husband, a father, you name it. And what I did, though, was I turned that fear into awareness. I made sure I didn't get complacent and my guys didn't get complacent, even though we'd been down the same road 100 times. I took the opportunity to train them on things, that tasks that we hadn't been given, just so that they were more prepared. And I never lost sight of my job was to bring them home alive. Now, war is hell and you can't control everything. And I wanted to know, though, that at the end of the day, if I had to hand a folded flag to someone, that I did my best to bring their son or daughter alive, home alive. And so that's the way I looked at them. And it's instinctive to care for them.
You know, I've heard a lot of stories from a lot of veterans about themselves being wounded, or even just others around them being wounded or killed. And quite frequently, there's a shock that sets in. And at times, guys are paralyzed in the moment. You know, they can't act, or they can't think straight. I mean, were you in pain? Did you feel anything?
I never felt any pain. It wasn't until I got to Andrews Air Force Base, like 2 or 3 days later, that I felt my first ounce of pain. Like I said, the adrenaline's going high, and your focus is on your guys, so the focus never came to me. I grew up landlocked, New Mexico, and we had our Medal of Honor convention in Hawaii in 13, and I ran off into the beach, excited about the ocean, and I stepped on something. I had no idea what it was, and I'm like, and get back. My son helps me get back to the room because I was cutting myself up on the coral. I knew what coral was, but so I looked at the bottom of my foot, and there's just like black ink and these like brittle straw-looking fingers sticking out. And I tried to grab one, and it fall apart. And I was like, "What the heck is this?" So I'll call the front desk, and the nurse—they're sending a nurse out with a kit. And I realize there's a pamphlet next to the phone, so I start reading it. It's talking about sea urchins. I had no idea what a sea urchin was, and I stepped on one, and it hurt. And so my daughter, who was younger at that time, I think she was like 13, she's looking at me, and I'm whining about this sea urchin on the bottom of my foot. And she goes, "Dad, you said it didn't hurt when you blew off your hand, you got shot through both your legs. Now you're sitting here crying about that?" I said, "No one's shooting at me, I'm just looking at it going, ow." I said, "It hurts more when that's your focus." But the brain is a very amazing organ. Your body will do more than you ever thought it could possibly do. It's usually the brain that'll tell it to quit and stop before it will. Mm-hmm. Same reason most time people go to the doctor. They'll fine until the doctor tells them they have something. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, "Oh my gosh, I got this or that. Oh my gosh." Actually got me in trouble with my doctor. I didn't see him in like 2 years, and he said, "Leroy, we need to see you more often." I said, "Nothing's been wrong." And he says, "Yeah, I'd still like to see you every 6 months or so." And I said, "If all the people that were healthy and felt good came to see you, when would you have time to see the sick people?" He says, "All right." And I said, "I'm just joking. I'll come see you. I'll check in."
Well, you know, I've got to ask you too, because you mentioned Memorial Day. This whole story centers around Memorial Day. That's what time of year it was. And you came really close to being one of those who we remember on Memorial Day. But you're also carrying another aspect of that price of freedom, because, you know, there are wounds that we can see, and there are those that we can't see. Can you help us understand how this has changed your life, just on an everyday perspective?
Being injured really changed my life, because you realize that you're dependent on other people. Like I said, we were alpha males, rangers. Didn't really talk to people if you weren't in our community. And when I was at the hospital going through recovery, the first person to come visit me in San Antonio before my family could show up was this young female who, she was EOD, and she was in Iraq, and she was going to grab some homemade explosives that they found that was falling, and it blew up and it took both of her arms off above the elbow. And she's standing by my bed and she's telling me what to expect, and she's smiling and having a good time, and I'm like, I got one good arm. I got nothing to complain about. This girl, females have, I mean, they got so much to do and she's young. But that was the thing. I saw other inspiring service members there as well as I got outpatient. And you realize you're not alone, that somebody else has gone through something tougher than you have, that you could get through it, which you can. But if you do it by yourself, it's going to be harder. And I realized I needed help with things, and I wasn't afraid to ask for it. And so even when I'd get dressed in my dress uniform, when I was on the road and my wife or somebody wasn't with me, I'd have to find the cleaning lady out in the hall. Hey, can you unbutton this for me? Can you do my cufflink for me? Yeah. It brought some humility, but it also brought awareness that there's a lot of folks that didn't get that one more second to do anything in this world, with their family, by themselves, anything. And makes you grateful for every second that you do have. I just look at that and I say, you know, I've been blessed with this opportunity, and I'm lucky I get to do it, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. You know, I think about the men and women who we've lost, the families that have suffered that loss, that we'll never get them back, and I welcome them as family, as the Gold Star families. But I also think about this last year I texted him, a gentleman I had the opportunity to meet, Howard Schultz. And what he said to me when we were first met that really stuck with me is, I can do more. And so I always look at an opportunity to do more, that when you're dead, you can't do anymore. While you're alive, you have the opportunity to do so much. And I try not to take it for granted.
And is there anything you want to say about your organization and what the purpose behind it is?
Congressional Medal of Honor Society is built up of now 66 living recipients, but taking care of the recipients and their welfare, also our programs of character development program, which is educational piece that's developed with teachers to use in schools to teach about the pillars and values that we hold dear, citizenship, patriotism, courage, a lot of those things, but also to reach out to our veterans and support them, talk to them about depression and suicide prevention and resiliency, and to have the courage to ask for help, but also to give help if it's needed. One of the things that I noticed in the military is that every branch kind of missed the big value. They got leadership, loyalty, duty, respect, honor, courage, selfless service, and personal courage, whatever. My number one is probably the honesty. They missed that, Ed. Honesty with yourself and with others. That is probably the most freedom you'll ever have. The Army says integrity, but it's easy to do the right thing when no one's around. It's harder to tell something to somebody that they don't want to hear. It's also harder for you to admit something that you don't want to share with others. And so having that honesty is one of the most important qualities someone can have.
Powerful perspective from Medal of Honor recipient Leroy Petrie, and what a privilege to share his story with you today. Leroy remains involved with the Congressional Medal of Honor Society, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Next week, we're going to get back to our usual genre of World War II veteran stories with a special Memorial Day twist. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.
If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses going to your heart, you just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.